Hello and welcome to another episode of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Mike Rankin. So glad you could join us on this day, evening, morning, wherever you are, however you're listening. I appreciate you. I have James Fox and Ken Sawalchuk with us here on Skype, and we are set to talk about some White Sox baseball here in November because the 40-man roster deadline was today as we record this podcast. Was it the 20th? Wednesday, November 20th, 7 p.m. Central Time was the deadline. And James, you were on the news this afternoon about Yermín Mercedes. The White Sox protected seven players here on the 40-man roster who are now safe from being put up into the Rule 5 draft. Let's go over some of the names first that we were able to see protected, starting with Yermín Mercedes, of course. But Blake Rutherford, Matt Foster was an interesting name who stayed under control, and Zach Birdie, Dane Dunning, Bernardo Flores, and Jimmy Lambert as well. But you broke the Yermín Mercedes news this afternoon. What about Yermín allowed, well, what was so enticing about Yermín Mercedes that the White Sox kept him on the 40-man?
I mean, I guess it's probably just because he could really hit. So Yermín Mercedes was acquired in 2017 in the AAA phase of the Rule 5 draft. And it's funny because the Sox actually did the same thing to get Omar Narvaez. And I don't know, I guess like Yermín, you know, from everything you hear, like he can't really stay at catcher, and he has a lot of serious defensive limitations, but he just like kept hitting. And obviously there is a difference between, you know, what he did at high A, which was, you know, still impressive, but he was like 25. Then he did the same thing at double A in the Southern League. And then this year, obviously he's playing with a super baseball, but I mean, he's still what had a weighted runs created of like 150 and hit 17 homers at Charlotte. So, I mean, it can't really be ignored. Like he might be DH only, but I mean, at this point they have enough roster spots where I just think they couldn't live with themselves probably if they lost him for nothing. So you might as well just hang on to him at least for right now.
Ken, I want to bounce something off you too and let you, you know, provide your thoughts on Mercedes, but Scott Merkin provided a quote today from Chris Getz saying that Mercedes can catch. You know, this is according to Getz. He's a pretty good receiver, he says. It shows up not only when you just watch his body of work, but from a framing aspect. You also talk to pitchers that throw to him and that have thrown to him often, and they really enjoy it. So knowing that, I mean, we're not so familiar with watching Mercedes catch personally. I haven't seen him live. Aside from just once in spring training, what's your assessment on Mercedes, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, pretty much with James, I mean, you know, certainly he can hit. And defensively, I know they've tried him around, you know, around the diamond, not only catcher, but first base, third base. And, you know, I think, you know, they're probably looking for a spot for him. I mean, you know, just going off, you know, one game watching on MLB TV, I saw him throw, you know, make a throwdown like second base on a steal attempt, and it went kind of like right center-ish. I mean, never really seen a throw, you know, go there before. You know, it was kind of really an odd way for it to wind up. I know you're, you know, basing something on one throw, but, you know, that was pretty, pretty unique where that ball ended up. So, you know, I mean, you know, maybe he's good at blocking the ball, keeping in front of him and that, but you know, throwing probably an issue, and, certainly it wouldn't be moving around so much had he had a solid spot. So, you know, we'll see where he ends up.
So to both your points, Mercedes is of course a hitter first, but listed at 5'11", 225, I'm looking at his baseball reference page right now. Of course, the guy matched in his time in AAA, and then he flew through AA this season. But at 26 years old, and you know, going to be 27 upcoming, I mean, this guy still has some pretty good years left. I mean, how realistic is it to see possibly Mercedes involved seriously in the active roster come 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess it just depends on what they do, right? I mean, so, I mean, you know, if they sign Yasmani Grandal next week and then bring in, like, an Encarnacion or somebody, like, I think chances are we're not going to see Yermín Mercedes. But I think what it does is it ensures that he's at least splitting time at Charlotte, you know, whereas, like, if you left him unprotected, like, maybe a bad team picks him up and just DHs him. And you have the 26-man roster this year, which probably played a factor in some of their thinking, I would think.
So, Ken, Matt Foster, let's shift off Mercedes here, because I think we're all in agreement that, and it's especially too now when we're looking forward to, you know, spring training, let alone next week. But if we're looking at February right now, before the White Sox even started their offseason acquisition plan, it's kind of unrealistic to project where some of these guys go. So let's move it over to Matt Foster, a guy who was a 20th round draft pick in 2016. He's protected on the 40-man roster over others who we'll get to in a little bit. But what do you know about Matt Foster, Ken, that allowed him to earn this spot with the White Sox?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Matt Foster really is a guy who's flown, you know, way under the radar. I mean, really nobody talks about him much, but he's really, you know, got an interesting, you know, repertoire. He's got four pitches. He's got a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, a slider, cutter, change. So, you know, he's really got command at four pitches, and he really put up some, you know, impressive numbers. I mean, he had a 1.08 whip last year in 64 innings. You know, he spent some time at Birmingham and Charlotte, but overall, I mean, you know, it's pretty impressive numbers. He's got 62 strikeouts in 55 innings there at Charlotte last year. So, you know, playing in those stadiums and that with the ball and everything, really, you know, some really impressive numbers. I don't know why people haven't talked about him more.
It's interesting because, you know, in the decision to keep Matt Foster, there were specific guys who were left out, and that makes them eligible to be acquired in the Rule 5 phase of the draft upcoming in December. And I can't help but stare directly into the abyss of what Alec Hansen is at this point, guys, because obviously we were so excited about the production following his 2017 season. You felt like with his size, his stuff, the amount of velocity that he has in his fastball comes straight downhill, especially with his frame, that the Sox were sitting on something legitimate, and now we're questioning whether or not he may even be available in the system come past the Rule 5 draft. So I'll start with you, James. Where do we see this Alec Hansen stuff going from here?
I mean, I'd be pretty surprised if somebody drafted him personally, but I mean, J.J. Cooper's like, you know, the you know, he knows everything about the Rule 5 draft, and it's like one of the things that he does for Baseball America, and he came out with something yesterday listing like 11 guys that we'd know that are probably going to be available, and Hansen was on there. So I don't know. I mean, if somebody had conviction on him, you know, that's in the Marlins front office or in the Detroit front office or Baltimore, or somebody that really liked him 3 years ago, and they figure, hey, why not? Like, let's grab him and throw him in spring training. I mean, that's possible. I don't know how anybody like rosters him, especially with like the three batter minimums and stuff this year. I don't know. He hasn't been very good, and it's not just command, it's stuff too. I mean, he's like throwing not even 90 sometimes, and he can't throw strikes. So, I mean, obviously I hope nobody takes him, and I hope he figures it out and he becomes part of something here. I feel like they probably have a feeling that he's going to skate by, I would think.
Yeah. I just can't see somebody, you know, rostering him for a whole year. I mean, you know, given the wildness, I mean, you got a reliever, and you know, even though there's an extra roster spot, bullpen spots are pretty precious. And even for a non-contender, you want to burn up pitchers and have to keep guys out there. He just, you know, walks too many guys, and you know, walking in a reliever, I guess it's early in the session, walks just going to kill you. I mean, you can't really, you know, replace somebody have him walk three guys in a row. So it's really going to kill your team. So I can't see somebody keeping him on the team all, you know, for a whole year. So I just think, you know, it's kind of strategic. They'll take their chances. You know, you always got to remember that when you talk about Rule 5, that they got to be able to stick in the majors for a whole year, or else they come back to the club. So strategically, I think it's a good move.
Well, and even like, you know, some of these teams that are bad and maybe trying to lose on purpose, they have somebody else that's better than Hansen that might be able to extract some value. So, you know, I mean, it's not just throw Alec Hansen out there to lose baseball games. I mean, there are other guys they have that are similar that might be part of some of these teams' futures, or, you know, they want veterans to flip a lot of them. So I don't really see it, but I've been surprised before.
Alec Hansen, like I mentioned, the 2017 season, 141 and a third innings between Kannapolis, Winston-Salem, and Birmingham. He was unbelievable. 114, only 114 hits allowed. He struck out 191, with a 1.16 whip. I mean, that'll get it done. And he made 26 starts that year across three levels. But when you look at the numbers this year, I think starting is completely out of the question moving forward with Alec Hansen, just based on what we were saying about his control issues. He spent most of his time last year in Double A, nearly 40 innings, a 2 whip. It's a hard fall, you know, it's a fall, a high fall, you know, where he's coming from. But it's unfortunate to see this level of regression in somebody with so much potential coming out, of course, in his first season, second season, whatever it was, as a professional. All right, let's move on. I don't want to get too down on this podcast. But we mentioned the other names, Dane Dunning, Bernardo Flores, Jimmy Lambert. They were guarantees, and you wrote about it, James, in a piece for Future Sox. Blake Rutherford, of course, as well. You're not going to let Rutherford go. But Zach Birdie's still a part of this 40-man conversation, and it's really not a surprise that he is, right? Because you spent a first-round draft pick on him. He had elite stuff coming out, but he's dealt with injuries. Where do we see Zach Birdie going forward from here, James?
I mean, I actually think Zach Birdie's the most likely guy on this list to help this year, personally. Just because, I mean, it was a leg injury this time, and if he's going to be full go for spring training, you know, he got roughed up on his way back from Tommy John, but he was starting to get some of his stuff back. So, I mean, if, you know, if he's pitching in major league spring training and he's throwing high 90s and he looks okay, I mean, there's absolutely no reason for him to spend much more time in the minors. I mean, he's pitched at every level already. He hasn't made it back to AAA since the surgery, but I mean, I guess you could send him to Charlotte and have him pitch high leverage innings in Charlotte. But honestly, if he's healthy and he looks like okay, like he's going to be in the big leagues because it was a former first rounder. He's on your 40 man. So, I mean, there's absolutely no reason to slow play this at this point. I mean, the arm should be fine. It was a patellar this time. So, I don't know. I'm like really curious to see Zach Birdie because it's one of these things where, you know, I think a lot of us have kind of criticized that pick and rightfully so, but I mean, it doesn't mean that guy can't be productive for you on a team that's winning. So that could be like a shot in the arm here at some point.
There are four players who did not get added to the 40-man roster at the deadline day. We mentioned Hansen, but Spencer Adams, Kyle Kubat, and Zach Thompson. Do you guys think they're in any trouble of being acquired?
Kubat, maybe, I guess, but he's also like 27 years old, yeah, I think. There. Spencer Adams coming back from back surgery, I would say no. I'm not even sure like where Spencer Adams is health wise, like whether he's going to even be ready to pitch for a White Sox affiliate next year. And then who was the other one? Zach Thompson. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, Zach Thompson was a guy that I thought they might protect last year and they didn't, you know, and then he skated on by and pitched in Charlotte all year, but was, you know, he didn't have as much good luck with the, you know, with the super baseball that Matt Foster and some of these other guys had. He wasn't very good this year.
Yeah, I saw Zach Thompson pitch one time in Arizona, come straight downhill, not overpowering, but he's got okay stuff. Ken, Kyle Kubat is a name that sticks out to me, and he's an interesting story because he transitioned from left-handed reliever to full-time starter last year, and he did pretty good. So I'm kind of worried myself that Kyle Kubat may be a threat. What's your opinion on the lefty?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose. I mean, he's a lefty. The thing, you know, that I'm looking at with lefties a lot of times now with the three-batter minimum rule is how are they pitching against right-handers? You can't just have a guy, you know, come in there and throw against, you know, you can't just have him pitch to one batter anymore. So, you know, can he consistently get right-handers out as well as lefties? And how tough is he on those type of guys? So I think you know, that's something you got to look at when evaluating a lefty at this point.
All right, let's move on. That was a good conversation. Just kind of summing up today's news of the 40 man, but there's more news that we need to get to because the White Sox made a decision to remove Omar Vizquel from the manager's position with the AA Birmingham Barons. We wrote about it up on Future Sox. It's posted. You could check it out on our website, obviously. But I wanted to get your guys' take, you know, in person here, because a lot of people were looking at Omar Vizquel potentially as the guy to fill in for Ricky Renteria, whether that was a far-fetched thought or not. It was kind of shared by a few. So I just want to get your initial reactions here. Ken, when we talk about Omar Vizquel, a lot of the things that come up related to the firing is analytics, and that's kind of been an issue with the White Sox as a whole in their department, implementing the analytical side of things in order to have success. What's your initial reaction here now that Vizquel was moved?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that's kind of ironic, right, that they moved him because he wasn't a stat guy and the White Sox known for not being an analytical type thing. But, yeah, I was kind of surprised by it. I really thought that he was somebody that they were grooming for manager and that they wanted to keep him around, and that's why they had moved him up. You know, certainly it's kind of hard to evaluate you know, minor league managers are developing guys. I mean, they try really to win games. Can you, you know, how do you project that to the you know, to the major league level, I suppose, is kind of a curious question. So, you know, I guess Sox determined that he probably really didn't have, you know, long-term managerial experience or, you know, to be a major league manager. So they probably decided not to. But I was really, yeah, a little bit surprised that they had cut him loose.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I wasn't expecting it because honestly, like, you know, this is an organization that just like doesn't generally fire people or make moves like this. But once it happened, I wasn't that surprised. I mean, I heard some stuff in season just about how, you know, I don't know if it went as high as Getz, but I knew that some people weren't happy with the way things were going. And obviously, like, a lot of guys struggled in Double A, and that's not all on the manager. But I mean, there were people that thought that Omar Vizquel, you know, kind of cared more about, like, winning baseball games to, like, help his resume more so than the White Sox development team. You know, I mean, I don't know how many games in Birmingham you guys watched, but there was a lot of games where he would completely flip the batting order. You know, he'd go, like, 1-9, and then he'd go, like, 9-1 the next day. And, you know, specifically guys like Gavin Sheets, Blake Rutherford, he would sit him against lefties to play righties and get better matchups to try to win baseball games. And you know, Double A in the Southern League is really hard, but that's really not what his job is. I mean, his job is to develop players for the majors, and he wasn't really doing that on top of not really having much interest in, like, hearing from any of the analytic people and, you know, the bunting too. You know, I mean, he was having top prospects in the system bunt quite frequently, which I thought was annoying, and apparently they did too. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, looking at it in hindsight, it's really not that surprising. I'm just not used to the White Sox making moves like this. I actually think it's kind of promising that they did it.
Well, that's encouraging, I guess. I mean, they're looking at different ways to make this work, it seems. And I wrote about it a little bit, just suggesting that they're trying to get the right blend of analytics while also sticking to the kind of their old school mindset of however the White Sox want to do business, whether it's you know, hit the ball hard or hit for a high average or, and what have you, and you know, play small ball. Of course, we'll see that with Ricky Renteria as manager at the major league level, but Mark Grudzielanek in AAA, there's a lot of good things said about Grudzielanek and Gershley as well, who spent time, you know, almost in every affiliate. The White Sox internally right now have a pretty good set of coaches that I think they feel confident about. But Omar Vizquel, I'm with you guys, was kind of one of those who got promoted from Winston-Salem after having a ton of success, thanks in large part due to his roster. But still, you can't deny the fact that, you know, he won the first half and he got to the playoffs. But, you know, if collectively you're seeing these guys, like you said, James, not do what they're intended to do at that level, and that's progress to their strengths and their skill set, then that has a lot to do with the manager putting them in that position to succeed. And it was a collective failure overall when you look at Birmingham this year. I mean, it was a huge letdown to see them get off to that rough start and then really just kind of tank across the first half of the season, played better in the second half, but, you know, there was a few issues there. So, you know, it is what it is, I guess, at this point. So we're moving on from Omar Vizquel, and here let's move on to another conversation as well, and we'll kind of wrap up this little podcast here by going over a few specific players that I was interested in and, like, what I'm looking forward as this offseason continues to progress. Because in free agency and trades, there's so many different avenues the White Sox can take this offseason. They have funds in their favor, and they're in a great spot to manipulate wherever they want to do based on their prospects. But when I look at guys like a Zach Collins, like a Cody Medeiros or a Gavin Sheets. I want to, you know, sit on those three specifically, starting with Zach Collins, because I feel worried for the kid to not have enough plate appearances at the major league level this season. James, do you have that same fear?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of handled Zach Collins weird at the end of the year, so I'm not really sure what to make of him. I mean, obviously, I'm a big fan of Zach Collins, even if that means he's, you know, a little bit at catcher, some at first, some at DH, and he just, like, hits really well against right-handed pitching. But I think there's a place for a guy like that. I mean, he walks a ton, and their team doesn't have a lot of players that walk, and he hits for power. Now, he may end up never facing lefties, and he might not be able to catch full-time. And I don't know. Like, so from the way he was handled, I really wouldn't be stunned if Zach Collins was in another uniform, like, 2 months from now. But it also wouldn't be terribly surprising with the 26-man roster if he's just kind of there and DHing against righties and catching occasionally either. So I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like you said, I think they could go a lot of different ways. And I was optimistic with the season that he had at Charlotte, but I was less optimistic after I saw the way that he was utilized.
Ken and James, that was a great point, because in 2020, they're implementing the 26-man active roster, which changes things the way that of course, organizations are going to manipulate their starting guys, but their active roster, I should say. With that in mind, what's your opinion of Zach Collins moving forward, Ken? Is he still somebody that the White Sox should consider, making a part of this legitimate rebuild?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, he would, you know, how reluctant the White Sox are to move guys up in September. And he was up all September. So, and, you know, they gave him pretty good playing time. Although I think, he still was pretty much against, especially against righties, but they were trying to definitely see what he can do. So I think he's really, part of their plans. Whether they acquire a catcher this year, I think if they don't, he might be on the major league roster. And with that spot, you can certainly carry a third catcher or somebody who can play first base, DH, and have multiple spots. So I think he's definitely somebody they're looking at. And, depending on what they do, he might be a major league player next year.
Gavin Sheets did a lot this season in Double-A Birmingham, to the point where you start to notice that he's hitting doubles, right? And he was able to hit some home runs as well. When you move up to the International League, especially what we know now about the baseball, is there reason to believe that Gavin Sheets makes a major leap this year?
I believe that he does, actually, yeah. So, I mean, if we had this podcast, this same type of podcast at this time last offseason, I would have been probably talking about how I hated the Gavin Sheets pick. And, he just had never really hit for power in the White Sox system yet. And obviously he was only at high A Winston-Salem. So, I mean, I kind of thought that, the Double-A Southern League was going to be like a bit of a graveyard for him. And I think early on he did struggle, but then he really turned it on. I mean, he finished with a weighted runs created of 122, I believe, and hit his 16 homers. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if he's doing that in the Southern League in those ballparks, I mean, there's no reason why he can't hit 30 homers in Charlotte next year. I mean, Daniel Polka hit, I think, 25 or 26 homers this year in the International League. So, I mean, even if Gavin Sheets isn't part of something in Chicago, I mean, I think he's absolutely tradable, because I think he's going to hit and hit a lot next year.
Ken, let's switch gears to our final topic on hand tonight, and that's Cody Medeiros. Cody Medeiros, a guy who was a highly touted pick, right? First round pick, who was a starter. And now this year, after struggling as a starter across his time in the White Sox system, moved over to relief pitcher, and he did pretty well overall comparatively. Now, he's still in Double-A, but he was on the White Sox 40-man roster all of last year. What are your thoughts on Medeiros at this point, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, it's something kind of even been a theme here throughout is, left-handers are valuable. I mean, we've talked about a lot of left-handers, Collins, Sheets, and now him. So quite a, definitely invaluable having a lefty, and he definitely had good numbers. I mean, you look, his numbers overall look so great, but he really came on June, July, August, his ERA kept dropping, and definitely put up, can strike guys out. So I think he's still, you know, an interesting prospect. He's really not developed as quickly as people would like, but you know, a guy who a lefty can get people out is really valuable. So yeah, I think he's somebody that they'll you know, definitely want to see what he can do in Charlotte next year. Yeah, I'd say he's probably going to be moved up. Haven't been here a full year in Birmingham.
James, do you share the same sentiments? It seems like Ken is still a buyer. Are you?
Yeah, I mean, they kept Medeiros on the 40-man roster instead of a guy like Josh Osich, who, you know, look, like, I didn't think Josh Osich was necessarily going to be here next year, but he was pretty good in September, too, and they've decided that Medeiros is more important than him. So, I mean, Cody is basically competing, I think, with, you know, Caleb Frere right now. And then there's also, you know, the two guys on the major league roster from the left side and Bummer and Fry, who we're used to seeing. So, I mean, I think all those guys will be in major league spring training as long as they're, you know, still on the roster at that point. So, I mean, I agree with Ken, like Medeiros probably goes to Charlotte and then they'll see what happens. You know, they have to find out whether he's more than a loogie, because those guys really aren't going to be as valuable anymore. But he was pretty good down the stretch, and I think his stuff played up a little bit too. So instead of like a fastball at 92, 93, you're looking at potentially being able to pump it 95, 96 with like the breaking ball that he has. I mean, that's, you know, from the left side, those guys continue to get a bunch of chances, and he probably will too.
All right, guys, really good stuff tonight. We had a lengthy conversation about all the happenings, well, lately, especially with this 40-man stuff and some of the guys that were left out. And, of course, Omar Vizquel moving on. Let's do this again sometime, because I just love talking to you guys.
Sounds good.
Yeah, perfect.
All right, guys, this has been another episode of the Future Sox Podcast. Appreciate you all for listening. Follow us on Twitter at Future Sox. Give us a like on Facebook as well. If you want to share this podcast, it's greatly appreciated. We are on iTunes as well, so just search Future Sox on iTunes, and you should be able to find out all of our content from there in audio form. So for James Fox and Ken Sawalchuk, my name is Mike Rankin. Thanks to all of you for tuning in, and until next time, have a great day.